Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Chris Siderick. Anyone who's also a parent has felt that existential pressure. Am I doing everything I can to help my child be successful? It's such a big question, but my next guests say it could be as simple as following the formula. Ronald Ferguson is a Harvard professor and the director of the Achievement Gap Initiative at the university, and Tasha Robertson is a journalist and former reporter for the Boston Globe. The two of them teamed up to interview about 200 adults and their parents to come up with a blueprint for how to raise successful kids. They detail the results in their new book, The Formula, Unlocking the Secrets to Raising Highly Successful Children. Ronald Ferguson joins me now in studio. Ronald, welcome to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
And Tasha Robertson joins us from New York City. Hello, Tasha.
Hi there.
So, Ron, I'll throw the first question your way since you're here in the studio. Let's start with something basic. How do we define success?
Well, the way we define success is not by anyone's point of view other than the person whose success we're defining. We have a little equation in the book that says purpose plus smarts plus agency equals fully realized. So we're talking about fully realized human beings that make the most of their God-given resources.
So that's a pretty nebulous kind of concept, obviously.
It is.
How do you
is.
Measure that?
Well, the way we chose successful people, that way, is that we chose people who really stood out to us. About half the people in the book are Harvard graduates, and other people are folks we just ran into out in the world who impressed us. But I just want to say, though, that the definition of success is not that you have to be one of these super talented people like the ones we talk about in the book. The formula is more general than that.
All right. Tasha, can you talk a little bit more about how you guys chose which stories to focus on, why you decided to focus on this quote-unquote best of the best?
Yes. So at the time, I was a reporter for the Boston Globe, and I started working there, and I noticed there was just so many smart people in that newsroom, and I started traveling all over the country as a roving reporter correspondent. And I noticed when I talked to these really smart people, I would talk about how they grew up. And I noticed that they would talk about their parents in a similar way. And Ron, of course, was the achievement guru at Harvard. I used to interview him for years. And so for maybe 10 years on my own, I started interviewing people about, you know, people I thought were smart, people who were like at the top of their game, young and old, and just started interviewing people about how they got that way. And Ron was doing the same thing at Harvard. So as far as like how we picked them, we just picked people who stood out, people who were at the top of the top, people who we thought had a chance to change. They had something about them. We knew they could make a change in the world. And I think we were right. Many of the people we talked to and interviewed, I mean, they're in their 20s and 30s and they're already changing the world. They're doing amazing things. But we wanted to know, how did they get that way? And we believe parents had something to do with it. But we wondered, did race or did socioeconomics have something to do with it? And we found that wasn't the case.
All right. So that's something to unpack. We'll get into that. But I want to ask you first about, you talk about 8 different models, basically, or roles that the parent has to play.
Right.
The first being the early learning partner. I think that's something that, as I was reading, like that seemed, yeah, that makes sense. I have to pay attention to my kid as he's growing up in those first few years, help him develop this passion for reading and learning and things like that. I'm curious, as you were looking at these common traits, were there any that kind of surprised you that you maybe wouldn't have thought of just kind of instinctively?
The ones that stood out that really surprised me were the philosopher. I hadn't thought about that so much.
And tell us a little bit about what that
is. Okay, the philosopher is the parent who takes a child seriously as a thinker from the earliest days. A 3-year-old can ask a really deep question, and the philosopher parent is going to think hard about it, maybe go away for a day or two and come back with an answer. These people said their parents always talk to them as an adult. But the philosopher is the parent who helps the child to find meaning, find a sense of purpose, to establish an ethical compass. And all the people we focus on had a mission. They had something they were trying to do in life, and you could trace it often back to the conversations they'd had with this philosopher parent.
I have to say, reading that idea of treating your child as an equal was really reassuring for me, because that's an approach. I have a 3.5-year-old.
Yes.
And sometimes I find myself wondering, what am I doing negotiating with a 3.5-year-old? This is crazy.
That's right. Good.
But yeah, that really does kind of help.
But then you find the negotiator is one of our roles.
Yes, exactly. And it helps them develop this sense of kind of agency, right?
Yes,
can you talk
exactly.
a little bit about that?
Exactly. Yeah. The negotiator will negotiate with the child, but will also help the child to negotiate outside the household. Tachi, you want to take this one?
Well, I'll give you an example of a negotiator. There was a young lady named Maya. Maya is she ended up going to Harvard, but when she was in second grade, she had an issue with her teacher. And the teacher was just teaching the kids cartwheels, and Maya wanted to learn. So Maya, the teacher would say, Maya, won't you play? Why don't you hang out with us? And Maya said, I want to learn. I want to read. So she went to her mom, and she said, Mom, what am I to do? You know, what should I do? And her mother, she asked her mother, actually, what are you going to do about this? And the mother said to Maya, what are you going to do, Maya? Not what am I going to do? So she gave her a few things to say, and Maya, second grade Maya, walked to the principal's office, told the principal about what was happening, had it set up a meeting, and the principal actually took her seriously because Maya was self-advocating for, you know, she had a problem and she had to deal with it. So when the teacher actually went to the classroom, saw what was going on, noticed that the teacher was not so great, that she was very green, when Maya came back, the next semester, the teacher was not there. And so it's just a story. This is just one of many stories of children taught at very young ages how to self-advocate, how to negotiate for themselves.
Such an important life skill. Tacha, I want to come back to something you said at the beginning of the interview, that you guys found that race and social class don't matter. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because that's a pretty staggering claim, I think, for a
lot
of people.
It is. Well, I thought, I mean, I was a reporter, like I said, at the Boston Globe, and I was fascinated by this issue about how people got smart, and I thought it was maybe white middle-class parents knew something that everyone else did not know. And as I started interviewing people, and Ron, he had a whole other project that he was working on, we noticed that it really didn't matter. Because, for example, one young man, Jarrell Lee, brilliant. Jarrell Lee grew up partially in a homeless shelter. And his mother would sit down. She was a great early learning partner. And I don't think the early learning partner is fascinating. So young Jarrell and his mother would sit in a homeless shelter on a bed, and she would give him flashcards and teach him how to read and teach him math. And so we saw that across the board. Every parent we talked to taught their child, they didn't just read to their child, they taught them how to read.
So I guess my question is, are you making the contention that there are not extra obstacles that face people who, you know, whether it's systemic racism or coming from a lower income
social
class?
We're making the contention that the formula is pretty much the same formula, independent of background. People from different backgrounds face different hurdles, but they don't let those hurdles knock them out of the saddle.
So, but we've seen a pretty demonstrable achievement gap, both in terms of race and in terms of income.
Right.
Is that an indictment of parenting?
No, the people we're looking at are at the top of the heap, no matter what the race or ethnicity is.
Right.
Right? So we're talking about the folks who end up being outstanding graduates from elite universities. Those folks were very often, and we found pretty universally in our book, have experienced these same eight experiences, the same eight roles in the formula that their parents played. And so what we're saying is, when we look at somebody who's had two parents who were both lawyers versus somebody who was homeless as a little kid, and we get into their story, they all had the early learning partner, the flight engineer, the fixer, the revealer, the philosopher, the model, and the negotiator.
So I'm curious because, you know, we think of Harvard, obviously, as maybe the top school in the country.
Right.
But we actually spoke on Radio Boston with Anthony Jack. He's a Harvard professor whose research kind of focuses on poor students at rich college campuses like Harvard. And it's fascinating because he talked about how structural policies really kind of limit some of those kids. Here he is.
We think that just because students are getting in and getting in under these conditions, that they're going to be okay. And then we realize, like, how many of these this hidden curriculum that students have to engage, these unset rules and unset and hidden expectations that trip students up. But then you also have these official policies that they have to confront, like the closing of dining halls, that really does undercut their ability to be full functioning people.
So talking about kind of the institutional mm-hmm. support and how the discrepancy there, I mean, how do you respond to that?
The folks that Tony is looking at graduated from Harvard. They're out in the world now.
But face
because
challenges.
They face that, the point, yeah. The question is not whether they face challenges. The question is whether they push through those challenges. And what we're saying is that the folks, most of the ones that Tony's talking about too, they pushed through those challenges. They were hurt by it. They experienced all kinds of setbacks, but they had what it took because they did have philosophers and negotiators and models and revealers that helped them to get where they got to.
We'll have to end it there. That's Ronald Ferguson, Harvard professor and director of the Achievement Gap Initiative at the university. And also joining us from New York, Tatcha Robertson, journalist and former reporter for the Boston Globe. The new book is called The Formula, Unlocking the Secret to Raising Highly Successful Children. Thank you guys both for being here.
Thank you.
Okay. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Chris Siderick. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.